This podcast contains explicit material. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to this mini text episode of The Joy of Text. I'm Rebecca Honig Friedman, and I'm here with Rabbi Dov Linzer, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Chovei Torah Rabbinical School, and Dr. Batsheva Marcus, Clinical Director at Mays Women's Health and President of JOFA. And Rabbi Linzer has a text for us to study today.
Yes, so I thought we would take a text from the Talmud Sanhedrin. And it's after a long discussion of a critical discussion of the things which a person is supposed to martyr himself for rather than transgress, of which one of them is arayot, forbidden sexual activity. And then the Talmud tells the following story, and I'll just read it in English. Rabbi Yehuda said in Rav's name, a man once conceived a passion, had a passion for a certain woman, and his heart was consumed by his burning desire. And the doctors were afraid that his life was at risk if he could not satisfy his desire. So the doctor said his only cure is that she, the woman he desires, who doesn't have a voice in this at all, she shall submit, that she agrees to have sex with him. Thereupon the sages said, better he should die than that he should yield. So this is consistent with the theme that, you know, you give up your life rather than do a sexual transgression. Then the doctor said, let her at least stand nude before him, and maybe that will satisfy him. They said, sooner let him die. Then said the doctors, let her at least talk with him from behind a fence. Let him die, the sages replied, rather than that she should converse with him from behind a fence. Question is, she's supposed to be naked when she's behind that fence or not? But somehow that would have done it. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Ber Idi and Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani had a dispute. One said that she was a married woman, and the other said she was unmarried. Now, if she was married, it makes sense, but because that would be related at least to the idea of adultery, even though obviously we're doing with many degrees removed from adultery. But if she was unmarried, why are we being so severe? So Rav Papa said it would have been a disgrace to her family. And Rav Acha bar Rav Ika said so that the daughters of Israel should not be, you know, made more immorally dissolute. Shelo yehi putzot ba'arayot, should not sort of give license to forbidden sex. So why not at least marry her? Again, nobody asked her what she felt. And then the Talmud says, no, it would not have, you know, there's a sense of forbidden waters, forbidden fruit. So that would not have done it for him, were marriage actually an option. So there's—
Wait, I don't understand what they're saying. If he married her, he'd no longer desire her.
If he would marry her, it wouldn't solve his sexual passion because his sexual—
For her?
For her. Because his sexual passion for her wasn't wrapped up with the idea that she was forbidden fruit.
So what would happen if he married her?
He wouldn't get over
marry her, he'd have sex with her, but he'd still be
dying. He'd still die out of his lust to have sex
with her unmarried.
Exactly. That's the passage in the Talmud. Now, I should say that halachically, this is relevant because it gets into a discussion that when things are not necessarily the three big sins, you know, that you're supposed to give up your life for, idolatry, forbidden sex, and murder, that it doesn't have to be the sins themselves, but even what's called avis rayu, appurtenances, things associated with those sins. So even if she was married, Talmud says, then we understand it's distantly connected to adultery. But the problem was if she was unmarried. That, by the way, I should say, leads to—
Wait,
a lot.
Why, if she was married, was it distantly related to adultery?
Because
wouldn't it be adultery?
Since it was three stages removed from him having, if he would actually have had intercourse with her, that would have been the sin of adultery.
And
you give up your life
being,
rather—
But naked or not talking to him.
Whatever is already a few stages removed, but since it's connected, and that leads to, you might have heard people say things like, going mixed swimming is yehareg val yavo. You should rather die than, you know, doing these types of things that are somehow connected to something sexual. And some of that comes from attitude, you know, halachic or related attitudes that come out of this passage.
Well, you know how I feel about this. I mean, you can know. Anybody who's been listening to this podcast knows how I feel about this because, you know, again, they're treating sexual desire as this like overwhelming, like crazy making lust thing that takes you over and you don't have control over yourself and you could die from it, or you're going to see her cleavage and you're going to have to leap over the table and grab her, right? It treats sexual desire like a what do you call it,
when like an illness?
This isn't sexual desire, is an uncontrollable force that you can't control.
Yes, it is. It's a different—
He's controlling it. He's not acting on it.
He's going to die from it.
Right.
Well, so the same idea, uh-huh. Right? In other words, like That lust is what like a debuk. Like, what do you call it when like
a debuk?
Yeah, something comes into you.
It possesses you.
You're possessed. You're possessed by desire. You're possessed by need something so much you're gonna die from it. You need it so much you can't control yourself. It's just like a bizarre, you know, characterization.
Well, what's interesting to me is I feel like if this was phrased a little bit differently, we could say like, he's so in love with her. He's consumed. He's sick because, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the implication is like, it's just sexual desire, right? It's not about
totally.
Love.
The word in the Hebrew is tina, which is almost like, yeah, there's something almost dirty about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that I think they are taking the woman into account in a way because like, why can't he just talk to her? Like, the idea is, like, they don't want to implicate her in any of this.
They're men that are protecting her, but obviously she doesn't have a voice.
Let's just
have her have sex with him. Let's just have her marry him.
Right.
Nobody's asked her where she thinks, but we...
Problematic.
But okay, yeah, so it's still a patriarchal society, but at least we, the men, are trying to protect this woman.
There's some idea that, like, even if she just talked to him, like, it's somehow public at this point. Like, people know about it. There's a discussion about it, and it would just be wrong to, like... even make her any party in any of this.
Right. I mean, I do think that's nice. Like, what's the big deal talking behind a fence, you know, and that would lead to all of these, that would be a pagam mishpacha, that would somehow, you know, be a bad repute for the family.
So
but you're right. In a way, it's almost like, why should she have to play into your nonsense and to your fantasy, you know? So I agree. Like, it seems like, yeah.
What do you think they're really trying to get at here? That's what's really bothering me, because I feel like, I find it hard to believe they really think this guy is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it hard to believe they think that her talking to him from behind a fence is the same thing as sleeping with him.
Right.
So the question then becomes, like, what is the point here? Like, what's the point that they're actually trying to make in this Gemara?
Well, that's what I think the phrase of, that the daughters of Israel should not be, like, licentious with sexual sin. And one read of this is like, oh, that's going to sort of create a license for women to sin, which is a little bizarre. But I actually read it the other way. Like, if men figure out that by making this claim about
they're
going to die or whatever, and that's going to get women to, you know, men have said a lot of things to get women to sleep with them and so on, you know, and we don't want to the word prutsota is almost like breaking through a fence. We don't want to allow this as a way to give people access to having women agree to something that they wouldn't otherwise agree to, even if that agreeing is just talking to them in a way. I don't want to talk to that guy. He's a creep. Oh, I'm going to die if you don't talk to me.
Also, there's something that I think, like, one of the points that I get from it is that there's something wrong with this kind of burning desire. Like, it's not right.
Normal.
It's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
well, the fact that, like, it wouldn't work if they got married. You know,
right. That it's not something we want to encourage, and there's something like wrong with him. I don't know.
So, and can you address this? Because I think it's the most interesting part of the whole thing. It says, "Miyom shacharav Beit HaMikdash."
Oh yeah, I didn't read that part. I was, right.
But it's important because it's the conclusion.
Yeah, so the day the temple was destroyed, sexual pleasure was taken. Oh yeah, right. That's like a discussion in itself. Sexual pleasure was taken from those who do it like lawfully and given to sinners. As it said, stolen waters are sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. So
it feels to me like that's trying to be the point here. I'm just not sure what they're trying to make. They're like saying that something about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, it took sex out of its rightful place and put it into, okay, now I'm going to be reading it, the joy of text reading of this, which is that you know, it makes sex that should be normal and considered lovely and appropriate and sort of distorts it into something that is not lovely and appropriate.
We've made sex dirty, as it were.
It also feels sort of like the falling out of the Garden of Eden or something.
Uh-huh.
Like some parallel there of like, we've fallen, you know, it's the falling of the destruction of the temple.
Right. But I also was wondering about how this plays into this whole, like, you know, what is that mating in captivity and, you know, eros and so on. So like, you know, people who find more sexual pleasure when it's not through a committed relationship or that's more exciting, new and erotic and exciting.
Yeah.
But the sense that we're living, that's less than ideal. That's not, you know, that we're living in a fallen world, that's the reality.
Feel that way.
Right.
Right. So that might be,
mm-hmm.
so that actually sort of brings it all together in a really nice way, mm-hmm. now that we're talking about it, like that we've lost this sense of sex as a glue and an activity between two people who love each other and are having a committed relationship. And we are only treating sex as something that you can want or really feel passionately about when it's not allowed and it's illicit and she's behind the fence.
Right. And that actually also goes through this Prutzot Barayot. Like, he just wants to use her. He doesn't really want to be in a relationship with her, you know?
Right, because if he marries her, it's not going to be any good.
Right, because then it'll be a relationship. So we actually have to protect women from being used this way. You can actually, you know, So that's nice. All right.
That was really interesting. We did it. Go team Joy of Tax. This episode of The Joy of Tax was recorded by Mike Hurst and produced and edited by me, Rebecca Honig-Friedman. If you have questions or comments you'd like to share with us, you can do so anonymously at www.thejoyoftax.org or send us a regular email at joyoftaxpodcast@gmail.com. The Joy of Tax is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, or any podcast app. If you like what you hear, show your support by giving us a 5-star rating and stay up to date with our latest episodes and live events by following us on Facebook or Twitter.